Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranormal Informal. Messed up, John. My name is Doug Kelly, and I'm John Rossi. Today is Monday. Well, I'm not doing good at all. Monday, July 19th. It is 2010, isn't it, John?
Yeah, I think you got that right anyway.
Hey, well, one out of 40 is... that really sucks, actually. We're glad everybody could join us tonight for yet another riveting, interesting episode of Informal Paranormal. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And tonight's screening calls, if hell should freeze over and we get some, is our own Mike Jones. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing in the chat room?
Well, I'm doing good.
Oh, we got some people saying hello. Good
cool.
deal.
So tonight we're going to talk about a couple of things. We'll talk about evaluating evidence from a critical thinking point of view, and we're going to talk about what you bring to the table in terms of being an anomalous researcher. We decided to do this tonight because we don't have anybody currently that John can go after. Right, John?
Yeah, that's it.
Since last week we did our demonologist thing. And I think we did remote viewing, too.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
which I had something fascinating happen, by the way.
Go ahead.
Just off the cuff here. Well, you know, John and I were working on this stuff, and I had mentioned to John because I had a death in the family and had things to attend to. So I the best way to put it is, you know, you're emotionally imbalanced. You know, you don't feel up to snuff on it. I already knew. I don't know that it's. Kind of preconceived notion as much as I felt off when I was trying to do the last remote viewing session, but I got nowhere close like I did with the others.
Hmm.
So evidently emotional status has something to do with how accurate, you know, you become. So
I would say that is, you know, makes sense.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because your focus is totally different. You know, you're not balanced and stuff like that. But it was an interesting observation. It's like John and I were talking about is, yes, it was a bad remote viewing session, but also what came out of it was I also discovered that I kind of have a sense for when it's fixing to be a bad reading anyway because I know I'm not feeling normal. You know, it just doesn't feel right when you're doing it. So... It's kind of interesting. It's a little bit of validation on when you know you're not going to have a good session. I know psychics talk about a lot of times when they, you know, the ebb and flow kind of deal. You know, when they're got a higher level of accuracy or a lower level of accuracy, they can kind of tell beforehand. So
commercials. We're being told that commercials are playing and not us. I don't know. Hopefully we'll get some more in the chat room who can tell us whether we're on live. We should be. Everything is good. But, you know, what you were saying, Mike, that makes perfect sense because when we're tired or distracted or distressed, I mean, we're really not up to snuff on anything. So it would follow that any kind of psychic ability might suffer as well.
Yeah.
So tonight, if you want to get in on the conversation... give us a call. The numbers are on your screen. You can also use the Skype button or the click-to-talk button if you have a headset on your computer. And we would love to have you chime in. We're going to, again, be talking about critical thinking in terms of evidence review, and we're also going to talk about what you bring to the anomalous research table. So...
I'd like to just make a comment about what Mike was saying about his remote viewing. Now, he said he had a terrible session. Yeah, it was the weakest of them to date. On the other hand, he still came up with some things in terms of descriptors that were dead on accurate for the photos in question. I mean, and you know what you were saying in terms of like being off or feeling like you're not connected and stuff. I believe that's absolutely true. You know, there's times when I go on investigations and I'm just not as sensitive, you know, because I know that I'm unfocused and I'm just simply not in that place where I'm as receptive to things as I am at other points.
Okay. Well, that's one thing that, for me, that I know that was my first time actually coming to that realization. It was kind of it's interesting being the observer and also the person involved. You know, that's what makes it kind of odd. And I guess, you know, just getting into this field for the first time, really, it's fun. It's actually fun finding this stuff out about yourself and, you know, about how much what's going on in your life affects that ability, you know. So you can almost plan ahead of when you're going to hit, you know, the high point of your psychic abilities.
Right.
I don't know. What I mean?
Yeah, I do. You know, one of the things I think that I have personally found frustrating, it's like when I decide to do something, it's like it's 100%, you know, point A to point B, straight line, doing it, you know, movements consistent in that direction. And with learning about certain psychic aspects of my abilities, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like some things happen when they happen and sometimes they don't. And, you know, sometimes it feels like you're going back a couple steps.
It's almost like you're not vibrating right, if that makes any sense.
Biorhythms are critical.
You know what I mean? That's the best way I can describe it, is it just doesn't feel right when you're doing it.
Well, let's talk about critical thinking and evidence review to begin with, and then we'll get into what you bring to the table in terms of being a researcher. And the reason this came up kind of at the last minute a little bit, this whole concept of critical thinking and evidence review, obviously we're all well aware of how important evidence review is in the field. I mean, we get pictures and videos, and I mean, every week something's being posted on Paranexus, you know, for evaluation, whether it's an EVP or a video or a photo or whatever. And so we really need to be working constantly at enhancing our own abilities to review evidence, to do critical thinking is what it amounts to. And I'm currently writing a course on critical thinking, and it's been a great lesson for me. Some of the things that I've been doing naturally, I'm now able to explain why I'm doing those things and what exactly they are. And you guys feel free to jump in any time, but let me just give you a quick nutshell basis on inductive and deductive thinking or reasoning. I want to start with deductive reasoning. I don't know, maybe people are out there study this in college or wherever, and it can be very, very, very complicated. It can be very difficult to grasp. It took me a long time to try to figure out what they were saying, and I've come to the conclusion that I don't know anybody understands it completely, because you've got deductive, you've got inductive, you've even got abductive, you've got logical fallacies, and there's a gazillion of those. You've got valid and sound, and you've got cogent, and you've got all these different things. So what I want to do is just give you a quick nutshell on deductive and inductive thinking or reasoning, because it plays right into what we're doing with evidence review and when we try to figure out what's going on. Deductive reasoning is really logical reasoning. It's very straightforward, and what it basically means is this. And I'll say it and then I'll explain it. Assuming that your premises are true, the conclusion is guaranteed to be true. So it's really almost a mathematical equation, you know, that A is equal to B is equal to C. It's like 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. Those are all types of it. If your premises are true, then your conclusion is guaranteed to be true. So, for example, if the premise that the sky is blue is true, then the conclusion is that, yeah, it's blue. And so when we're reviewing evidence, can we use deductive reasoning? And we do it all the time. We look, for example, at a picture. We look for telltale signs that it's been photoshopped. Or we look for realism. We look for things that tell us it wasn't faked. And so we form premises of these photographs or EVPs or whatever they are, and then we come to a conclusion. Now, it's some photographs are pretty straightforward. You know, you can quickly see that they've been faked, and they were, and so no big deal. So deductive reasoning basically says if premise one is true and premise two is true, then your conclusion is going to be forced by those premises. In other words, whatever those premises say is what you got. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Or am I complicating it? Are you guys asleep yet?
Not yet.
John's just speechless. What the hell? Okay, so deductive reasoning is your premises, whatever the facts are, force the conclusion. Your conclusion's based on those. Pretty straightforward. Inductive reasoning is when we get out of the mathematical part of it. That's when we start coming up with hypotheses and theories and things like that. And so inductive reasoning basically says if your premises are true, the conclusion is likely to also be true. So deductive is if your premises are true, the conclusion is guaranteed to be true because it's more mathematical. Inductive, if your premises are true, then your conclusion is likely to be true as well. For example, take astronomy or cosmology. You know, they've been discovering a ton of planets in the last decade or so, right? How are they doing that? Well, they are looking at the star. They're doing it in a couple of ways. They're doing it by the star's wobble. And they're also measuring the light emitted by that star. And if it dims out just a little bit, they can infer that a planet has crossed. So what they're doing, they're not actually seeing the planets. What they're using is inductive reasoning. They are saying, okay, the star is wobbling. That's premise number one. The star is blinking out just ever so slightly. That's premise number two. Well, what can cause those? Well, the conclusion is likely to be true, and that's that the planet is there. So I don't know. Is this making any more sense yet?
Oh, absolutely. That's also, by the way, how they also figure out what kind of atmosphere is around that planet. How that operates is they're actually checking the light spectrum and the way it shifts when that planet's in front of the sun and the light goes through its atmosphere, they'll get a spectrum shift, and they can actually tell the chemicals on the planet. A lot of people don't know about that. That's something I was reading about not too long
mm-hmm.
ago.
I just saw a documentary. I forget which one it was, but it was the other day. So anyway, what does this have to do with reviewing and analyzing evidence? Well, if you're with me, you can see it has pretty much everything to do with it. We're doing a lot of inductive reasoning, aren't we? We're looking at whatever facts we can glean from a case, and we're formulating premises with those facts. And, for example, one fact might be experienced a cold spot. We measured it. The temperature outside was, 85 degrees. The temperature inside was 78 degrees. We measured this cold spot at 45 degrees. That's a premise. It's a fact. It's something that it's some evidence, right? And maybe we got an EVP at the same time. There's another premise. So, what does that suggest? Well, people have been trying to answer that question for a long time. But that's the kind of reasoning we're doing. The thing that we have to do is look at it very scientifically, at least to the extent possible, so that we don't formulate false premises. For example, we take a picture. Wait for it. Wait for it.
Orbs.
Okay. We take a picture and we get these little orbs, these white orbs in the picture. Well, that's a premise.
Those
okay.
are demons.
Yeah, well, that's...
Here we go.
Yeah, you're going to get good.
That woke me up.
John Anna. John Anna is doing it. Okay, so you got these orbs in it. What are they? Well, that's a premise. It's something. Well, let's see what else we got. And then you go from there. And so you start doing inductive reasoning, thinking, okay, what could it be? Why are these things appearing? You start looking at all the different things, such as dust and airborne particles, and how close the flash is to the lens, and so on and so forth, and whether any demons were reported in the area prior to you getting there. There you go, John.
Yeah, there you go.
So, since I'm apparently carrying this, we have to make sure that our premises are as factual as we can get them before we settle on a paranormal conclusion. We've been preaching that one for a long time.
Well, right. And, you know, that has a lot to do, and this is a good example, like, for instance, that Waverly footage. I'm doing follow-ups on it, and what I'm doing, essentially, is I'm finding every example of video footage of infrared bugs in flight and the rod phenomenon, which what I'm essentially doing is I'm looking for other evidence to support the fact that it's a bug. And that way I know for sure that my assessment's going to be correct, whereas, you know, otherwise you really don't know what you're looking at. You know, and we've already run down the facts of it's not a bat, it's not lint. You know, you start going down the list of what isn't it. And then you can also deduce from that what kind of experiments can you do to recreate the situation to have the exact same thing happen. And, you know, that way you come to a logical conclusion of what it is instead of just guessing. And, you know, that's the biggest thing I've noticed in this field is a lot of people just automatically jump to folklore or, you know, stuff like that, that just jump to conclusions and say, you know, it's a ghost, it's a spirit, it's a demon. And they don't even have anything to back it up.
And when you get into critical thinking skills, that jumping to conclusions is actually a logical fallacy. In other words, it's well, you get the word, it's a fallacy, it's a logical fallacy. And what you're talking about is a logical conclusion, and that's what I'm talking about too. And when we use our critical thinking skills to reason on things, we want to, as much as possible, try to come up with logical conclusions that are based on factual premises. So we need to make sure that our evidence gathering, whatever it is done in as much of a controlled way as we can. It needs to be, we need to be able to support that. And here's another interesting thing that I'll bet you most researchers in the field don't know. I'm sure some do, but I'll bet you most don't know this, that in the science world, there's a logical fallacy called falsifiability. You guys ever heard of that one?
I've never heard of that term.
It's not quite what it might imply, but falsifiability simply means that in order for an argument, a logical argument or reasoning, critical reasoning, to be valid, you gotta be able to prove it or disprove it. In fact, one of my resources that I was using even used this example of demon possession. I'm not kidding either. They use this one. You know, somebody says, I'm possessed by demons. There's no way to prove it or disprove it. So you could say that that argument, that is, I'm possessed by demons, is not falsifiable. So there's no way to prove it or disprove it. So therefore, it's an invalid argument. That's in the scientific world. Obviously, in the paranormal world, we deal with all kinds of falsifiable, non-falsifiable types of pieces of evidence. And that's where you have to get into a little bit more than what our current science will show. But by the same token, we still need to be as logical as possible and, as I always say, as grounded as possible. Come on, John,
yeah,
it's your turn.
I was going to say, you know the video that Mike was talking about, the Waverly video? If we put that up on YouTube, people would have gone insane.
Oh, yeah.
They would have looked at that because it's such a dramatic piece of video. Literally, you know, it would have been the big buzz. But, you know, we were very cautious in terms of our review. And we're continuing to be cautious in terms of the review and looking for the logical and most likely explanation for what it is. But, you know, it just, the field, there's just so many people that want to prove something that they'll put anything out there because it supports their belief as opposed to supports the evidence.
You bet.
And a lot of people just don't get the distinction between the two. And that's why there's just so much nonsense that goes up there. You know, I think, you know, I don't think that people are putting up dust on purpose in the sense that, oh, yeah, this is dust, but I'm going to tell everyone it's a spirit. You know, it's because they genuinely want it to be a spirit. They genuinely believe it's a spirit, even though, you know, the reality is when you do photoanalysis, it's clearly it's dust. So
they're jumping to conclusions.
Well, they're jumping to conclusions, or they've already made up their mind. They've already decided that something exists, and now I have to prove that it exists. As opposed to, you know, there's times when I'm just as happy after the evidence review to find out that it's something that's not paranormal, because I've learned something in that process. You know, to find out that something's not something is, in fact, still learning something.
Right.
You know, so a lot of people, on the other hand, though, when it doesn't fall in terms of where they want it to fall in terms of the evidence, then they feel like, you know, they're let down and they're disappointed, and they really need to reorient in terms of their mindset that when you have a piece of evidence and you thoroughly review it, wherever it falls, you know, that's the success. You know, the success isn't putting something up there that it's something that you want it to be, and so you put it up there and say, oh yeah, here we got a ghost. So again, you know, people just have to get to the point where they're okay with where the evidence falls. You know, if it falls sometimes supporting, you know, a certain belief, good. When it doesn't, that's good too, you know, because we learn from both.
Yep. And Kathy asks a question in the chat room, does using inductive reasoning involve making assumptions? And the answer is yes. And just to use the same example I used a few minutes ago on with cosmology on detecting distant planets, they're making assumptions, which we're calling premises, that if the starlight dims out ever so slightly, and if the star wobbles ever so slightly, something has to be causing that. What is that? You know, it's probably not, you know, the Death Star from Star Wars. It's probably a planet. And that's actually a good analogy, because so many in the field will jump straight to the Death Star from Star Wars rather than, you know, a natural planet. And that brings us, you know, to Occam's razor, that in the absence of evidence, I've just got a brain fart. I went blonde. Wait, I am blonde. The
simplest.
Thank you. That's the word I was blowing on here. The simplest explanation is at least likely the correct one. It's likely the correct one. It doesn't mean it's always the correct one, but it's the most likely solution. So we can conclude then, we can assume that there's a planet tugging on that star and dimming the light up. It's a logical assumption based on sound premises.
Well, and on top of that, I'll tell you the reason the planetary, the extrasolar planetary example is such a good example for that type of inductive reasoning is because they've got more than just one way of proving it now. And that's how they're pretty sure that that's what that is. You know, it's not just one thing. They're not just seeing the star wobble. They're actually seeing the light, you know, dim a little bit. They're seeing the spectrum shift. They've got all kinds of different data coming in that's supporting their hypothesis. Now, it's still a hypothesis. It's not totally a truth yet because nobody's actually been there to see it. But the fact of the matter is, they have a lot of supporting information that would make it true, you know. And that's the same thing with the orbs. You know, it's like how many different ways can you make an orb? You know, there's humidity, there's dust, there's particles. I mean, you know, there's a million different things that will cause orbs. And those are all good examples that lead us back to the conclusion that orbs are contaminants in the air, period. You know. So,
Kathy
you know,
brings up and... Go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead. I'm done.
Kathy brings up another good point, and I'm glad she did, because it's a good point to make. She says, but wouldn't you have to use deductive reasoning to a point in order to develop an assumption? And that's exactly true. When we begin to evaluate evidence, let's use, I don't know what happened to me. I've been good all day up until this radio show. Now I can't talk, I can't think, I can't do anything. We should use deductive reasoning as far as we can go with it. And again, deductive reasoning means that if your premises are true, your conclusion is guaranteed to be true. So we can't always get absolute knowns to use in deductive reasoning, because that's usually what it entails, is absolute facts. The premises are facts. And if they're facts, then your conclusion will be a fact. In inductive reasoning, if your premises are true, then your conclusion is likely to be true. So the better your premises, the better your conclusion. But we have to get into assumptions then. We have, because we may not know facts. We may have no known premises. So we have to, that's why they develop theories and hypotheses.
So when you have a situation, Doug, where you're taking a truth from one discipline, where it's been proven that, let's say, I don't even know, use an example, but let's say in one of the scientific arenas we have proof that A exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we now take A and we want to apply it in the paranormal arena,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Don't we have to be real careful? Because even though it's a truth in one area, we're now putting it into a different
context.
There are different, I don't know, a different situation where if you proceed a certain way, don't you need to, in the back of your mind, remain cautious that, you know, even though this is a truth here, it may not be a truth there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's things like that. I can't come up with any quick examples. But in life, one thing might be true in one area, but not true in another. And so we have to be careful. I know there's a logical fallacy for that, for applying one thing to another area where it really doesn't apply. But it's absolutely valid. We just have to be careful. We want to make sure that what we're saying is based on, is to the extent possible, on natural law. Now, with what you're talking about, I would think that in most cases where we're talking about physics or physical laws, they should apply in most cases. But even that argument can be thrown out, because if you look at, you know, macro astronomy or macro physics, I should say, versus quantum physics, you know, they don't mesh well, as we all know. And that's why they're trying to come up with the theory of everything, so that we can marry quantum physics with the typical physics that we use for big things in the universe.
Okay, so like for instance, here on Earth we have a concept of what gravity is. And let's say the very first time we went to the moon, you have a concept of what gravity is, but when you got up there, you ended up finding out that, yeah, there's gravity here, but it's different. It's much less. But initially, you know, the hypothesis would be, say, well, gravity is the same no matter where you're at.
Correct.
You know, and so by going there, again, you know, you just have to be cautious and you have to be adaptive, if you will.
That's why they need to test the stuff.
Well,
just
absolutely.
Like you said, you know, we can calculate that gravity on the moon is going to be whatever it is. I know on Mars it's, what, 1/6? I think of what it is on Earth.
It's a ratio of mass, right?
Yeah, it's 60% of what it is on Earth, something like that. Okay, that's what we can calculate, but then we got to go there and check it. We got to confirm that hypothesis.
But the analogy is, I mean, they knew before they were going to get on the moon that clearly the gravity was going to be less there. But my point was is that on Earth there was a set of accepted facts in terms of this is what gravity is, this is what gravity does. But when you took those facts to the moon, it doesn't hold. Right?
Right. So in that case, then they would have to reevaluate their premises.
Right.
Right.
And Kathy in the chat room says inductive reasoning once said the Earth was flat. Yeah, maybe. But then inductive reasoning also said that the Earth was round back in that same time, because they were saying, well, look at the horizon. Look at how ships disappear over the horizon. We can assume then that the Earth is round. But they didn't know until they actually went.
And, you know, that's one of the things, when you're coming up with inductive reasoning, one of the, I think, of the biggest things that people have to learn to do is make a list of common denominators and experiments to bring you to the information. You can't sit there and just, you know, come up with a hypothesis and because you get one bit of data say it's true. You've got to come up with multiple different experiments to verify what you're talking about. That way, you're, you know, you're pretty much covered. You know, you have a way to test it, you know, make sure reality is functioning that way. Human perception is so skewed, it's real easy to botch an experiment. You know, that's the reason there's a protocol and method, methodology to science and why they do what they do when they develop their experiments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, so, obviously, by observing something, you change the conditions.
Right. Well, that's quantum physics, and that's kind of thrown things in a... kind of threw everybody off a little bit, but yeah.
But. Well, one of the things, you know, we have to be careful with in terms of the research that we do is, like, the equipment that we're all using. We're all essentially using equipment that wasn't designed for what we're using it for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of, it really amuses me to no end when I hear these people running around, oh, we're a scientific team and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they're really touting their equipment, yet there's nothing that really supports that their equipment does what they think it does. You know what I'm saying? And in the way that they're using it, that in fact that what they're getting is valid readings and valid results.
Well, we don't quite know how to apply that data in many cases. I mean, we're obviously limited on what kind of equipment we can use,
right,
and apply to the field. But then it's like EMFs. It's like, how do you know? I mean, you can get spikes, you can get things like that, but we've obviously made assumptions that when we get a spike that wasn't there, we might be getting something. But we don't know that yet. That's we're building a hypothesis.
Yeah, except, and that's my point, but there's a lot of people running around that say, oh, well, this scientific piece of equipment that's been around for 30 years says this is the case, when in fact it's not the case.
So what you're trying to say is, being a scientific group is not dependent on what kind of equipment, or even if you have equipment.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of times the quote-unquote scientific equipment is not being used in a scientific manner, and the results are not valid. So there's really actually nothing scientific about it, you know? They've got essentially what they are is a group with a bunch of gadgets.
So what makes a team scientific in nature?
It's what you're talking about. It all comes back to the deductive analytical reasoning and using common sense. And you know, Mike was talking about having protocols and having, you know, creating experiments that you can eliminate, you know, human error, or try to eliminate or minimize human error. But I think that a lot of times what happens is we end up making some big assumptions and taking those assumptions and we start to treat them like facts. And one of the areas I think that is really problematic for our field is with equipment. You know, we make some huge assumptions about what the equipment can do and what it means that's really not supported by any evidence, you know. There's some things that, you know, anecdotally suggest that there may be a, you know, a connection or some cause and effect. But it's anecdotal evidence at this point. And as we know, anecdotal evidence is incredibly weak evidence, and most of the time it doesn't stand the test of time.
But then we've got these examples when the anecdotal or empirical evidence is pretty compelling, and we don't want to throw that out either, but it goes right back to what we were saying earlier, is that we've got to make sure that the premises upon which we base our assumptions or theories or hypotheses are to the best of our ability sound, to the best degree sound. And here's why it's so important, and I've mentioned this on Paranex Universe many times, the validity of any evidence stands squarely on the soldier's shoulders of the person who gathered that evidence. And so if we are too quick to put out some piece of evidence as paranormal in nature, and then it becomes known that it gets explained in a very reasonable way, what does that say about us? What does it do to our reputation? Well, it kind of kills it a little bit, you know? You look at some of the folks on TV who have now been basically nailed on different things. You know, you got to guard your reputation more than anything. So be very cautious about putting anything out there and calling it paranormal, because there has to be pretty darn good support for that. You have to be able to support your argument, and most people can't.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that kind of leads us into what John was talking about. You know, if you're going to be a scientific group, then go about it in a scientific way. Be logical. Be stubborn in terms of calling anything paranormal until you have a good case and you can support your argument to the critics. Now, I don't mean the naysayers, the debunkers, the Michael Shermers, the James Randis, and all those people. I just mean you can reasonably support your argument. So be a scientific group. But that also brings us to the point that we want to talk about tonight. What do you bring to the table? And so if you're listening to this live or you're listening to it on the archive, think about it for a moment. When it comes to anomalous research, what do you bring to the table? How is this field better with you in it than without you in it? Now, if you can't answer that question off the top of your head, you got to come up with an answer. And then it's not like we don't need you or want you. We do. But you need to be aware of what you bring to the table and be proud of what you bring to the table. And there can be any number of things you bring to the table. Just what we were talking about tonight. You're good with evidence review. You're a logical thinker. You're a critical thinker. You don't just buy into things that you see. In fact, part of critical thinking is being open-minded. It's everything we've always talked about. It's approaching with no preconceived notions. It's the ability to self-correct. It's the ability to be aware of any particular beliefs or assumptions that you're adding into the mix when you shouldn't be, and to catch yourself and to adjust. So it's being open-minded. It's not being closed-minded. That's what it's all about. So maybe you bring that to the table. What are some other things that people can bring to the table? And I'll, John and Mike, get in on it. Let's just talk about what can people bring to the table of research?
Well, a good example would be new methods or new protocols, for in the field research. One of the theories I would like to test, and I know I've talked to you about it, is using strobes hooked to a computer that's actually recording the frame rate the same as a strobe, just in case it's something that we're missing that our human mind can't see or the normal cameras can't see, something with a high-speed camera strobe that can be digitized. And, and then, of course, the full-spectrum cameras, that's new on the scene. People are starting to use that a lot. There's all kinds of different things, When people come up with new ideas of how to approach things to gather evidence, I think that's a big, significant step in helping solidify theories and find out the answers, The infrared stuff, probably didn't really start until, the 70s when they started using infrared technology and it started discovering they could see things in infrared that you couldn't see with the human eye. Mm-hmm. So, that's the whole point here is the more technology it develops, the more people come up with ideas, the better we're going to be in gathering evidence. The other thought is, thinking outside the box. That's one thing you taught in your course, and I think it's one of the biggest things to remember is always think outside the box no matter what you do. It's because you can't ever tell. There's going to be that one time that you think something is what you're seeing, and it's not. you know, and so you have to keep your mind totally open to everything that's possible and be able to test that notion. So, you know, that's something I think a lot
of
research. Yeah, exactly.
Bringing an open mind to the table, yet grounded. See, in my opinion, those people that bring an open yet grounded mind to the table of anomalous research are great. I mean, you know, that's what we need. We need more grounded yet open-minded folks who are critical thinkers. So if you bring that to the table, that's great. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do. And this is what I'd like to pose to you. If you still are not confident on what you bring to the table, and you might be thinking, well, what can I bring to the table? I just started, or I just recently started. And some people say, well, you know, I've only been doing this a few years. What do I bring to the table? I don't really bring anything yet. That's not true in any way, shape, or form. You, who are you? What makes you you? You know, what experiences have you had? I mean, that filters or influences what you bring to the table. Maybe you bring a unique perspective to the table. Maybe you're an inquisitive type person, and so everything you see, you're asking questions. That's actually a good thing, something you can bring to the table. I mean, and I'll just give my own example, what I think I bring to the table. I've been a teacher, and I don't mean in school, but I just mean a trainer, a teacher, for most of my life, public speaking, motivational speaking, corporate training, writing, human development, personal growth. That's been me. That's been me all my life. That's who I am, what I do. Okay, so when I was finally able to get into paranormal research about 5 years ago, I brought that to the table because I didn't see that, you know, and I wrote the CPI course a couple of years, 2.5 years ago or so, almost 3 now, and I brought to the table why it's so important for you to know who you are and why you are who you are, have a good, healthy self-concept before you even go out and think about doing paranormal research. You know, these are some of the things that is who I am, that I brought to the table. It was a different slant on things. It was a different approach. And I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people who bring those very similar types of things to the table. But nobody can bring Doug's stuff to the table quite like Doug. And nobody can bring Mike's stuff to the table quite like Mike. And nobody can bring John's stuff to the table quite like John. So what do you bring to the table is the big question. And let's move off of this particular aspect of the topic and let's get into a related part of it. One of the things that I have heard time and time again from founders is that they, number one, it's hard to find team members, good team members especially. And then they find somebody and those people seem to lessen in their enthusiasm. You ever had that problem, John?
Oh yeah, all the time.
And so these people come on board thinking they're going to get all the excitement and thrills that they see on TV, and as soon as they discover it's nothing like that, they, you know, they become a little colder, a little more lukewarm, I guess. They're not so enthused. They're not, and they may start, I don't know, showing up late, or they may not show up at all, or they may not be available. You can just see that their enthusiasm is going. Sometimes people will even become... They'll introduce a negative component to the team where everything's negative, you know, and they start draining the energy out of other people. In this case, they're not bringing anything to the table. They're subtracting from the table. And so here's another good question. As anomalous researchers, are we somehow subtracting something from the table? That's not a healthy thing, not a positive thing. Are we taking something away from the table that should be there? Something to think about. If we're negative.
Right. Well, I've got a basic question, you know, for you to ask yourself. Are you a trophy hunter or are you a researcher?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically what it breaks down to. Are you there to get scared or are you there to actually learn something? You know? Because that's pretty much what I've noticed about people. They're either there for the roller coaster or they're actually there from their own life experience wanting answers. You know, and Now, granted, there's people out there, I would think, that just have the general interest and never had anything happen to them until they got into paranormal research. But I think the genuine hardcore researchers have had at least one experience in their lifetime that led them to this path.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, wouldn't you agree, John, on that?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, probably any time anyone takes any kind of life's journey, there's usually some type of precipitating factor that has pushed them in that direction. And, you know, most investigators have had, you know, some type of experience or someone that they were close to or respect. Had something happen to them, and it, you know, it intrigued them, and again, it moved them in a certain direction. You know, Doug, when you were talking about, you know, things that you bring to the table and stuff like that, you know, two of the things that I think are probably the most, almost, I'd have to say just about the most important is honesty and integrity.
Yep, definitely.
Because without those, because if people decide you're not honest or you have no integrity, it doesn't matter how good you are from a technical standpoint, because everything you do is going to be held in question.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know,
that's one of those kind of areas where you simply cannot afford to, yeah, conduct yourself in a way that people will question your integrity and your honesty.
Well put, and that reminds me of a time many years ago. Man, this must have been 20 years ago now. And I had an office equipment business in the Black Hills, South Dakota, and I was looking for an office manager. And so I was interviewing people. And the people that came in, you know, I would do the interviews, and there was this one young gal that came in. She must have been, I'm guessing, in her early 20s. You know, not terribly experienced, but I didn't care. I could train him. I just wanted somebody who was, you know, good with people and that sort of thing. So I was interviewing her, and one of the questions I always ask, whether I'm interviewing somebody for employment or whether I'm interviewing somebody to join my team, and many managers do, I ask them at the very end this one last question: why should I hire you? And I'm going to tell you, before I even tell you what she said, I'm going to tell you that if somebody said, well, let me tell you what she said, and then I'll tell you what would throw me. I asked her this question: why should I hire you? Last question. And she did this. She went, Then she finally said, and I just can't think of anything. And I said, very good. Thanks. I appreciate the interview. And I never called her back. And, I mean, we notified the people that didn't get the job, but I didn't call her back to work because my thinking was, if you don't know why I should hire you, then how on earth would I know? And so let's bring that now to the paranormal field. And the same is true if I'm looking for a team member, too. Why should you join my team? What do you bring to the table is what I want to know. And so you got to know, if you want to join a team, why should they have you? Why would they be better with you than without you? What do you bring to the field? Now, if this young lady had told me, if she had said something like, you know, Doug, I don't have any experience in an office, but I have had 24 years of being honest. I've had 24 years of learning how to work hard and giving a good day's work for a good day's wage. I've had 24 years of knowing how to treat people kindly and appropriately. And I may not have the experience, but I am a fast learner. And if you agree, I would love to come to work for you. My only question would be, when can I start? Now, if she said something like that, I'd have had to get up off the floor because I'd have fallen off my chair. And if I did, I would have said, you can start as soon as you want. You got it. Because somebody who has that level of confidence to tell me the honest truth, man, that's something they bring to the table. That's hot. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God. This is somebody who gets it. They don't know everything, and I don't expect them to know everything, but they're willing to say, I don't know, but I can learn, and I really would like to work here, and I know I can be an asset to your company if you'll just give me the opportunity. The only question is, will you give me the opportunity, and shut up? And I'd say, oh, my God, you're the one. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Yeah, that's what I'd be singing.
Well, you know, there's a second stage to that even. Even after you've got your team together, are they going to follow through and keep doing their job? You know, that's the other asset you have to look for, I think, in people.
Catherine actually is asking a question in the chat room. How do you guys find team members? Which is, I mean, that's kind of tricky in this mm-hmm. field. You know, how do you find team members? You know, I do a lot of public events, so I have actually people that will come up to me and say, hey, you know, I'm really interested about stuff, and, you know, how do I go about joining a team, you know, and they ask us questions. So I always tell them, well, you know, the first thing you should do is go and get certified through Paranexus. I mean, literally, that's what I tell them to do. And one of the things that I'll do in terms of recruiting people is I'll put, like, an ad on, like, Craigslist, and then I always end up getting a lot of calls, too. And then I'll take, you know, the four or five that I think are most interesting, and I'll have them meet me at, like, a coffee shop. And then I kind of do this kind of semi-group interview / informational thing about my group. And I do it for two reasons. First of all, I see how many people actually show up to the meeting.
Right.
And then I see how they all act together. Because that's really telling, you know, because I've found over the years that, like, when you do one-on-one interviews with people, that, you know, Harry the Axe Murderer can sometimes do quite well one-on-one for a half hour. But when you mix it up, when you've got, you know, six different personalities, the true person comes out frequently. And so I just find it a better way to do it.
That's a good thing. I mean, it, you know, a lot of people complain about the certification process and whether it's ethical and all that stuff. And I'm not even going to get into that here. If people want to know, go to Paranexus.org and look at the executive director's blog. There's two blog articles on it. But the benefit of requiring people to get certified is it rules out the looky-loos. It shows you what people are going to be serious about this. If they have to put a little investment in of $65 into getting it certified, that's going to help. You know, people spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on hobbies, and yet some of them complain about spending $65 on a training course that will help them in all types or all areas of life. Come on. You know, so that's one thing. And just what you said, John, getting them in a group environment will help you to know how they'll work together as a team. The other thing that I want to get into here is we've talked about what you bring to the table and that everybody does bring something. We want to make sure we don't take something away in a negative way. We're not subtracting from the table. But there will be those times when you have a team member, and this could even be you if you're listening to this, but you have a team member who's winding down, whose enthusiasm is not there. They're missing meetings or they're missing investigations. Of course, you know, if somebody was to absolutely just not show up for an investigation when they said they would, I mean, frankly, in my opinion, on my team, they would be, you know, pretty much out anyway. But maybe they're late, or maybe they're causing problems, a little contentious, or something like that. Whatever the case may be, you know, you as a group founder, you got to address that situation because they're sucking the life out of everybody else, whether you want to realize it or not, they are. And they're not a good... They don't have a good energy to be on an investigation anyway. And I'm just talking about the vibe. You know, we all have a vibe. We can get a vibe. Some people's vibes is positive. Some people's are not. And so you got to do something. You've got to get them off the team. Or you have to ask them, look, do you really want to do this anymore? And the thing is, it doesn't matter to me whether they don't or do. But if they don't want to do it anymore, and if you're on a team and you feel this way, and if you don't want to do it anymore, then... For gosh sakes, please do yourself, your team, and the clients a favor and just quit. Quit the team. Don't do it anymore. Nobody says you have to. You know, it's better if you do that. Otherwise, make sure you bring something to the table that's uniquely you, that adds to the field. Make sure that what you bring to this, the field would be better with it than without it. And we all have those things, and we encourage you to bring them. And bring them to Paranexus.org, too. If you're not a member, come and join us. We're a trade association for paranormal researchers, anomalous researchers, of all kinds of, all types of anomalous research. We're looking for people. And the interesting thing to me, it never ceases to amaze me, is we don't have people flocking to us because we're not sensational, because we don't put John's Waverly Hills video out on YouTube and say it's a ghost, because we don't have the drama. But we are trying to be serious about this and understand the human condition and understand what it means to humanity to find this kind of evidence and to offer a compelling conclusion.
The other thing that's unique about Paranexus, and most people probably don't understand that, is that we're not promoting Paranexus. We're promoting individual investigators and individual teams. Paranexus is a means for the individual investigator or the individual team to get better, to get levels of support that they wouldn't otherwise have.
Mm-hmm.
So all the other ones that you see out there are really nothing more than fan clubs, and that's clearly
mm-hmm.
what,
yeah.
You know, this isn't like the Almighty Doug Show, you know.
Right.
This is about you, Doug, helping others get better in this field.
All
you know,
of us.
And that's what makes this unique. But you're right. There's not a whole lot of. It's not as sexy as some of the other stuff, of course.
And that's human nature, you know. That's, and it never ceases to amaze me, this whole thing. Because we don't have people flocking to us, but we've got some great people. The people that we have are solid, they're serious, they're doing their thing. You know, it's hard to get a ton of people because we don't have all the fancy stuff. We offer more membership benefits than any other association that I know of. And yet, you know, it's still hard to get the serious people because there just aren't as many, comparatively speaking. And so, anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. I wanted to talk about it. We would love to have you at Paranexus. We're going to continue to grow strong and go strong. Paranexus is a nonprofit organization. You know, we are doing what we're doing. We're doing it because we're doing it first and foremost for us individually, because we all want to know too. This is who we are, what we do. We continue to do it, and we want those who are like-minded to come and have a part. No egos here, and we don't compete with anybody.
That's the whole point. It's a learning collective, and I think that's what's so wonderful about it. You know, not one person has a say over anything. It's a total everybody checks everybody's information out and gives their ideas, you know, or their actual background of what they know of, you know, what's going on, you know, to help you, you know, get your evidence in line with what's logically happening instead of you just making assumptions. I think that part of it's just great, you know. You can't find that anywhere else.
And the other thing is, you know, we don't have an agenda. So, like, for instance, if a team sends some evidence in and basically it's going to be reviewed by investigators from literally all over the world, and they come back and say, this is an incredibly compelling piece of evidence, this is very significant, you know, that puts a lot of weight on in terms of what you now can go around saying about this piece of evidence. It's not just you and the other four or five people on your group saying, oh, yeah, I got this great photo. This is a lot of people with a lot of varied expertise and experience, you know, coming in potentially support of your evidence, you know.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that puts it in a different place.
And that's what we're all there for. I mean, that's such a great benefit of being a member, because you can post it. You can get different viewpoints. You can get different evaluations. And if it is, in fact, paranormal, you know, in fact, we're going to be the ones to help support it. So, and I love us because I love us because the evidence that we review is not the sensational dramatic stuff that you see all over YouTube and everywhere else. I mean, there's been a couple of things that are pretty compelling, but as it is in reality, most of it just is naturally explained one way or another. But that's a great benefit. You can submit evidence, you can get in on it. Man, I could just go on and on, and I'm not going to, but come and join us. We'd love to have you. We've been talking about a number of things tonight. We've talked about critical thinking, the importance of applying critical thinking to our evidence review. We've talked about what you bring to the anomalous research table. I hope that some of the things that we brought up tonight will get you thinking. That's the biggest thing. Get you thinking. And please, you know, outline at least in your mind what you bring to the table. And then bring it.
You know, the biggest thing for me and the thing I want to see so badly happen is to push this field all the way to the point where the scientific field looks at us as equal peers. You know, and I know that didn't matter to a lot of people, but for me it does, because this is science. We're trying to develop it, and it's just, it's so ambiguous, it's hard to have, you know, good evidence to say this stuff's really going on. And, you know, things do happen, and I'm witness to that, but it's just, I know it's out there, I know it's available. It's just a matter of getting good people that have good methods, have good open minds, and they're willing to push the field forward in a good, grounded manner, but keep open-minded. Don't shut yourself off, you know, to you know, any ideas that, you know, are outside the realm of what, you know, everybody else is saying is going on in the science field, because, you know, a lot of physics, quantum physics at one time, was just a fallacy. You know, everybody was laughing at that back in the 20s and 30s, but now, Dave, that's just a major, major field of research. So, you know, this is kind of the same thing. It's just coming, it's in its infancy, and it's growing, and we just need to make sure that we go about this in a logical, grounded manner.
And, we've interviewed a few open-minded scientists on Paranexus Universe, and, you know, the one thing about them is that they all identify with what we're doing. They all understand with what we're doing. It's really the closed-minded, academically trained, and stuffy scientific community who doesn't buy into this stuff. And yet, something's going on. We need to discover what that is. And we will, because, you know, I'm not gonna let it go. Now, I, for one, will not let it go. Something's happening. We need to understand what it is. Whether that's an aspect of the human psyche that's causing all this, I don't know. Whether it's literally craft in the sky, aliens visiting Earth, ghosts, you know, contacting people, I don't know. But we're going to find out. One way or another, we will. Because how hard can it be? It's not impossible. It may be hard, but it's not impossible. We, as a human race, can make it happen. Now, this coming Thursday on Paranexus Universe, we have Travis Walton, who you may have heard of. He's been around a long time. He's an abductee. His story was the basis of the movie A Fire in the Sky. What was that, the early 80s, mid-80s?
I believe so, yeah.
And so he's going to be joining us on Paranexus Universe this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're honored to have him. It will be very interesting to get his story straight from him. I've read his story many times in many different books, and so it'll be great to be able to talk with him and ask questions. So please join us for Paranexus Universe this coming Thursday night at 9 p.m. And we've got a lot of great guests lined up over the next few months, a lot of interesting topics. Anything you want to conclude with, John?
No, I think tonight was an interesting night just in terms of some of the concepts that we were talking about tonight. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you kept saying, you know, what do you bring to the table? It's like, you know, you don't even need to limit that to the paranormal table. You could use that as a guiding mantra, if you will, in terms of your life in all circumstances, you know? What do you bring to that situation? Is it positive or is it negative? You know, are you contributing or are you subtracting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the interesting thing about it, we have fewer people in the chat room now than we did when we started this conversation. And that's what I find, unfortunately, with many of the people in the field. They're not open to personal growth. They don't understand, what does personal growth have to do with paranormal research? In one word.
Everything?
Everything. Every effing thing. It does. It's like, you know, knowledge cancels fear. Knowledge cancels fear. That's a huge nugget right there. People get afraid of this stuff. There's nothing to be afraid of.
But Doug, you're making them get off the roller coaster.
Yeah, the crisis mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Researcher, I live from crisis to crisis. If I don't have a crisis, I freaking make one.
There you go. You know, right. that's the whole point. You know, that's what defines a good researcher. You know, don't be on the roller coaster. Keep everything grounded. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's one thing that we did not bring up, and I want to mention here, is be passionate. If you ever had to be passionate about anything in your life, when you're doing any kind of research, be passionate, because it'll carry you through the hard times when it gets boring, when it gets lengthy on evidence review, stuff like that. It'll carry you through it.
And that's an excellent point, and it's what I've always said about Paranexus. You know, I mean, Paranexus is now 2.5 years old. You know, and it's like a slow moving locomotive. It's powerful, but it's starting off, you know, slower than many of the other sensational sites. Fine. The point is I never founded Paranexus because I needed a bunch of people with me. That's not the reason. I'm going to do this, and I'm looking for like-minded people, and that, I'm talking about the early days, and it still is true. I wanted to be around like-minded people, and look at the people that I've met. I mean, 2.5 years ago, I didn't know any of you guys, and yet look at the friendships that have developed. Good, solid friendships. Great people of like mind, and we're making headway. And yet, I'm still going to do it because I do it for me first and foremost. I want to know. It's who I am, what I do. And the same has to be for everybody else. Why are you doing this? You can't do it for anybody else. You can't do it for any recognition. You can't doing it for any pats on the back. That's not the purpose. That's not the objective. The objective is to figure out what's going on and bring something positive to the table. And we're beating it. I don't want to keep beating it, but I keep getting passionate about it.
I was laughing just a moment ago, and I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing at Spin Dave. I think that you may have to do an intervention here in the chat room. You were talking about fear, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to be afraid of. But Spin Dave is saying, but I'm afraid of fear.
Yeah, definitely needs an intervention there, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
I got two words for you, and then they're simple words you can carry through the rest of your life. Stop it.
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. All that money we pay psychologists, all we got to do is stop it. That's funny. All right, folks. Next week, next Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have another episode of Informal Paranormal. If you have topics that you'd like to discuss or like us to discuss, why not shoot us an email? Just send them to admin@paranexus.org. You know, this whole show is just about talking. It's just about being informal and coming up with stuff and just talking back and forth. And we have a lot of good conversations. There might be slow parts, but that's usually John's fault. But then, Duff.
All right, we'll talk about demonologists next week.
He wants to talk about demonologists again next week. And then after that, we're going to talk about orbs.
Orbies.
Yeah, so, you know, you got topics or you'd like to get in on it. This is what it's for. It's informal. It's just friends talking. And so we would like to have you be a part of it, too. I mean, if you've got something you'd like to share, maybe you've got a great case that you've done, an interesting case. Why not come on and call up? We can get you on. You can talk about it for a few minutes. There's nothing to be afraid of except fear itself, according to Dave. So, You know, it's just no big deal. And, you know, there might be a few nerves in the beginning, but there's nothing to be nervous about because you're in good company. You know, and I'm sitting here shaking in my boots every time. So, you believe that?
Oh, Sharon. Sharon wants a show on skinwalkers, evidently.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to do that one of these days as soon as she finds somebody to put on. Sharon's our executive producer. All right, so with that, we appreciate your time tonight. We appreciate your those in the chat room with your questions and your humor. And if you're listening to the archive, thank you for listening, and hopefully you found some value in it. Hope to see you this Thursday night at 9 for Travis Walton on Paranexus Universe. Thanks, Mike, for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
And John, as always,
be nice.
I'm just saying, I was letting you say something. As always, thanks.
Oh, thank you. Good night, everyone. Great
everybody,
night.
Yeah, have a great week. Hope to see you soon. Good night.
Take care, everyone.